Thanks for listening to the Suzy Larson Life podcast, available thanks to support from listeners like you. It's only just a matter of welcome to Suzy Larson Live. Always so honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. So here's a question for you. How can you tell if you're living with a scarcity mindset? Well, here's some thoughts. You're easily triggered. Maybe you expect perfection from others and certainty from God. Your thoughts are mostly on you, on your survival, your protection, and your resources. But if that's the case, and if that's even partially true about any of us, do you think it's the way that God wants us to live? Some of you may relate to that description. Others may say, well, that partially describes me, but deep inside, I know I'm not free. Well, no matter where God finds you today, know this, He has more for you. He has more for you. Today, we're going to talk not only about scarcity mindset and how we get there, but abundant mindset. And this is teaching from Jamie Winship, who we have on every month for an identity check. We're going to talk about living, moving out of a scarcity, self-preserving mindset into one that frees us up to live the adventure that God has for us. And we'll talk more about identity. And as always the case when Jamie joins us, is you're going to hear stories that likely will blow your mind. I'm just telling you. We'll draw from his book, Living Fearless, Exchanging the Lies of the World for the Liberating Truth of God. If you want in on the drawing, just text the word book to 877-933-2484. Now, I've asked you this a few other times when Jamie's been on. I'm just going to ask again because our listenership is growing by leaps and bounds, and you may have missed a past conversation, and I will weave these answers into my conversation with Jamie. And because it's a raw and honest question asking for a raw and honest answer, I'll consider all answers anonymous today. And here it is. I've asked it before. I'm going to ask it again. What are you afraid of? Tell me that. What are you afraid of? 877-933-2484. Now, quick announcement before we hear from Jamie. Maybe you know someone who's suffering today in need of a gift of hope. Well, we would love to partner with you to help bring some hope to them. Tell us about that person in need. And thanks to some Faithful Faith Radio donors, we're giving away a stack of Visa gift cards to help lighten the load for some this season. You can find out more information on our website at myfaithradio.com. All right, now let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Jamie has decades of experience bringing peaceful solutions to some of the world's highest conflict areas. Starting with a distinguished career in law enforcement, his unconventional efforts to bring about societal and racial reconciliation led him to Indonesia, Jordan, Iraq, Palestine, Israel, back to the U.S. He's worked with leaders in a variety of sectors, from police departments, pro football teams, faith-based organizations, even schools. He's the author of Living Fearless, Exchanging the Lies of the World for the Liberating Truth of God. And I will tell you, our life group is going through one of his video series that you can find on identityexchange.com. Amazing. Jamie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Oh, it's always good to be here.
Looking forward to the conversation so much. And you know the drill because you've been on enough. Oh, first question is always very personal. What has the Lord been talking about these days?
Well, you kind of said it right there at the lead-in, especially this time of year, the Christmas season. We've been talking a lot in our community here about scarcity versus God's abundance and God's supply. So that's, it's just been a really constant topic for us, is that whole idea of how much we live in a scarcity mindset.
Well, for those who maybe didn't hear, well, a lot of people didn't hear that message. When you gave that message, it was a private gathering. But give us, just expound a little bit more on maybe what we don't know, things we assume that we're wrong about.
Oh, well, yeah. It's interesting because in the Christmas season, you know, we're reading through with our grandkids who are visiting us, who live in the Middle East. So they're visiting. And so I'm walking them through the Christmas story. And in one of the devotions that we did yesterday, it was talking about how Caesar Augustus had a birth announcement, and that was posted around the Roman Empire. And the inscription, this is what it says: the birthday of the god Caesar Augustus has been for the whole world the beginning of the good news. Therefore, let all recognize a new era beginning from his birth. That was the birth announcement of Caesar Augustus.
Wow.
And so when you're reading in the Gospels, in Mark, for example, that says, this is the beginning of the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, that Jesus's birth was a direct challenge to the lie of the empire. So it's the empire versus the kingdom. And when the Roman Empire was ruling at the time of Caesar, you know, there's a census. And so when you have an empire ruling, it's a separation worldview. And what an empire does is separates people into groups and categories and brings division. And so when you do a census like Rome was doing, it was so that you could conscript soldiers and pay taxes. So the whole move of the separation worldview is to divide and separate, to conscript or draft into servitude, and to tax. Jesus, conversely, in the connection worldview, doesn't separate people. God reconciles, the kingdom reconciles people. It brings peace, and it sets people free. It takes away the burden. It cancels debt. And so you have these two in this Christmas season. We like to talk a lot about the difference between the announcement of the birth of the true King Jesus versus the what humanity would set up in an occupation sort of debt creation empire, and how different it is. And so to live in the one is to live in scarcity, and there's only one way to do things. And if you don't do it the right way, you're not going to get a second chance. So you can't fail, which, as you said, forces people into, I've just got to protect myself and this world is against me, versus the reality of God, the Father, Son, and Spirit, the connection worldview, and that we're ambassadors of reconciliation in a world where there's enough. And it's mysterious, and grace is mysterious, and forgiveness is mysterious, and love is mysterious. And failure is learning. There's nothing to be afraid of in failure. Failure is learning. And in that world, we can be other-focused because we're not just self-protecting. So it's watching Jesus versus Caesar in this story, and how Jesus comes to the shepherds and to the outcast, and makes really ordinary people into extraordinary humans. And so I love that about the season. Sometimes we forget it. We get kind of lost in, you know, do we have enough money and all that stuff. But to me, it's a real remembering how differently we live than the way the liar would live.
Wow. And we'll be spending a few minutes here talking about how you know if you're living in the empire or living in the kingdom. And where life group, and a number of them are doctors, and one's a trauma surgeon, and he talks about there's times where he's, you know, doing trauma surgery on a gang member, and he said he feels like, you know, he steps away and he's got, you know, rules he has to follow, and he goes, I feel myself in the empire, but when I know I'm going into harm's way and going into these trauma places, I stop and pray, and I'm bringing the kingdom. I'm stepping into the kingdom, and I'm bringing the kingdom. And I just thought that is such an amazing thing, because you're living in the now and the not yet. And even just you talking about the Caesar's birth announcement and declaration, and what an almost in-your-face statement that Mark's gospel would say, actually, this is the birth announcement. I mean, that's pretty bold, you know?
That's right. It's very much, we're not going to bow down to this. Yeah, that this is, that the empire is not good news, and that the kingdom of God is really the liberating good news that humanity is so thirsty for. It's, you know, it's the light shining in the darkness.
Wow. Yeah. If you live in an empire, you live in the constant terror that if you make one wrong move, you're beheaded, you know, you're impaled, truly. And it's like, of course, you know, that still does happen in parts of the world today, but really in the Western world, you're not in going to worry about being impaled. But truly, there is still the same kind of fear and self-preservation. I can't make a mistake. Or people who are living in that kind of fear are expecting others. You can't make a mistake. You know, I mean, it's so interesting to me how binding that is, you know?
Yeah, because you're everything's risk management. I mean, that you just learn to live in constant risk management. And when you're living that way, it's really fascinating. It's not that there's no other opportunity. It's that when you're living in risk management, you can't see the opportunity. It's there. You're just unable to see it. And it's a kind of identity question as well, is when I'm living in a false sense of myself, which is typically based in a false sense of God, the false self can't see what's true. And so it's amazing. We have a small group that we run of 20 to 30 year olds. And one of the exercises we're doing with them is we do listening prayer together, and we talk about identity, and then we'll ask them, in the truth of who God made you to be, let's ask the Lord to give you a vision of your future, like an idea of where would I be in the next 5 years kind of thing. And then we make them go around and just speak it out. And what is so interesting is when you start doing that in a group, they start seeing opportunity in the areas of where they're talking occur in their life. And it's not magic, you know, it's just that when it's like lifting your eyes up and looking up to the hills, and you start to see things that you don't see when your eyes are down and when you're downcast and when you're self-protecting. And you become more encouraged to look out further, and the group starts seeing opportunity that was always there. Really encouraging. And then they start talking about it in the group, and they say, hey, you know, this week I had this opportunity to do this thing that's in line with what I feel like God's inviting me into in the world. And that encourages the rest of the group to also look outward. And that's the way community works in the kingdom. So it actually, you're inciting one another to love and good deeds, which is why you want to never neglect the gathering together of the saints.
Wow. Amen. And I know we're not together in person, friends, but I think I want you to do this exercise. Let's just try it together as we get ready to go to break in a few minutes. Maybe set us up as if you had all of us in the circle with you, Jamie. Set us up to take a few minutes to lift our eyes and to dare to ask God for a fresh revelation and vision of where He may be taking us in the years to come.
Yeah, just imagine that you're in a place and Jesus is with you, some quiet place where you're sitting together with Jesus, and you're asking the Lord to talk to you about who you really are. Who do you say that I am? How do you see me? How do you view me? Because we're experts in how the world sees us, unfortunately. But Jesus, how do you see me? And then 1 year from now, 2 years from now, Lord, where do you see me in the truth of who I am? Where do you see me? What am I doing? Where do I live? Just give me a picture of how you see my future. Just to meditate on that is really uplifting.
Boy, that's so good. All right, friends. So I dare you just to take a minute to just ask the Lord that, to ask Him to show you that. Picture maybe you're sitting by a lake. Picture you're sitting under a tree by a lake, and you got Jesus with a smile on His eyes and kindness in His heart, and He sincerely wants to talk to you about opportunity, about hope, because He wants to prosper you, not to harm you, to give you hope and a future. If you dare to let yourself hope, what might come up? I'm asking you to text me, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, talking to Jamie Winship, and we're drawing also from his book, Living Fearless, and we will be back in a moment. This is Suzy Larson, host of Suzy Larson Live. You know, I learned a valuable lesson while walking through one of the deep valleys of the shadow in my life. Our hearts can't live without hope, and we have reason for hope because Jesus is with us in every season of life. Using the word HOPE as an acronym, I want to remind you of four very important truths when it comes to hope. That God is a healer. One way or another, He will heal and redeem your story. O is you are meant to overcome. P is you have a purpose and a calling. And E, God wants you to live with eternity in mind. If you're struggling to make it to the next moment, text the word HOPE to get a fresh dose of hope. We are here to help you and walk with you through this journey. You can text 877-933-2484. Thanks so much for tuning into Suzy Larson Live, talking to our good friend Jamie Winship, who joins us every month for an identity checkup. And he's got an amazing website and ministry at identityexchange.com. And opening the show, just what's been on his heart is the teaching of a scarcity mindset and how to move to an abundant mindset. And you were kind of paralleling these two kind of empire versus kingdom. And the empire is tyranny, and it's captivity, and it's you're constantly living like you're about to be rejected, about to make a mistake. And you can't flourish, you can't heal under such conditions. But in the abundant mindset, you can live with mystery. You can live with your fallibility. If you were to finish this sentence a few times, you might be living in an empire if. Could you give some descriptors on that?
Yeah, if you're in constant conflict is probably the number one.
Wow.
The empire is always at war. It's always at war. It never has peace. And so it politically, socially, and internally in your own heart, there's just no peace because the empire is never satisfied. It always wants more. And so when I'm talking to any person, and I've just today just had some interesting conversations where I met with a group of former major baseball league players who are working in Major League Baseball to try, if you can imagine this, they're trying to make Major League Baseball a place of kingdom, not empire. This is the kind of things people are doing once they understand the beauty of the gospel, the truth of the gospel. Because as players and former players, they're saying when they're playing baseball young, it's joyful to them. It's a sport, it's a game. But as they get older, it becomes empire to them, and they lose their joy in it because it's all about numbers and salaries and did you play well enough, and they lose their joy because the empire takes over. And so that's the number one thing is conflict, and the conflict is always sourced in fear. You're afraid all the time that there's not enough, you're not enough, there's not enough. So that's when I'm talking to people, I'm always asking them, tell me something that you're afraid of, because it's producing conflict inside of you. And when you have that conflict inside of you, you cannot be a peacemaker. You can't give away what you do not have. Mm-hmm. And so this just plays out in everything we're doing, just continual conflict in our neighborhoods and in our, country and between countries.
I'm trying to imagine our doctor friend, there's times he's been in between, two different gangs while he's trying to remove bullets out of a patient. But he is so in step with the Lord that he literally does know that he goes in harm's way, knowing he's bringing the kingdom, we need that kind of bravery. You have that kind of bravery, Jamie. And I keep thinking if I hang around you long enough, it's going to rub off on me. But anyway, I know that's not how it works.
We need to hang around each other more.
There you go. Thank you. There is sort of how it works. You walk with the wise, you become wise. So anyway, here are a few people who've texted in. Scared of rejection and the possibility of not living my best life. Scared because of my fear of rejection. I'm missing out on the great things God has for me. I'm scared that I've already wasted so much time. This one. Lack of comfortable relationship with my husband. I'm afraid of that. Afraid of not having enough, not being enough. Perhaps worst of all, losing the good things that I do have. When things are bad, I struggle to believe they'll be good again. When they're good, I'm bracing for impact that they're going to be bad. I'm waiting for the proverbial shoe to drop. This is normal, first of all, friend. I want to normalize that. This is normal culture right now, but I know we have an enemy behind that. He wants us all in that mindset, don't you think?
Yeah, and all of the things that we're afraid of, and all of those that you read, are common in every culture at every age. Those are common fears because humans were made to be in community, And so any place where we feel like we're not going to be accepted or we're going to lose relationship, it creates fear in us, as it should. The challenge is what is the fear pointing to? Like, what if I say I'm afraid of rejection, what it means is that I'm afraid that I'm not worth it, that I'm unworthy, that I'm not valuable. And that all the rejection does is why it scares us, is that it validates something that I already know about myself, such as I'm not worth it or I'm an imposter, right? But what the fear is trying to tell us that's good is that's not true. That you are valuable, that even if someone rejects you, and this is the beauty of Jesus, rejected by humanity, but he doesn't lose his identity based on the defilement of another person. A person's rejection can't give you identity, and it can't take away identity. And so that's what the fear is trying to tell you, is like what you believe is false. What you believe is false. That God's not capricious. He's not given one day and taking it away the next day. That's a wrong view of God. And as we move into what's true about ourselves and true about God, that fear is no longer necessary. You just don't need it anymore because you walk in what's true.
Oh, love that so much. So you were in town. Well, we broadcast all over the world, but you were in our town for an event, and some friends from our life group hosted you in their home, and you guys went out to dinner after. And she had a chance to tell you what she's afraid of, because that's your common question. What are you afraid of? Because it gives you so much information at what the enemy's doing, the lies we believe.
Right.
And the
right.
thing that she was afraid of, because we've been really impacted by your teaching, but she'd heard a story, and I don't know if she'd heard it from someone who was associated with you, but one of your team members, when you guys were in the Middle East, you're empowering these young leaders to make decisions, but he went against your basic advice and led his team into a situation where some were killed. And the fear that she had is, I fear I'm going to make a mistake, and it's going to be unredeemable. And you said, well, you don't know the whole story. And so you told her that story, and it changed everything. Would you tell us that story?
Yeah, I mean, the example that you keep giving of the doctor who's risking his life to treat warring gang members and all, this is all the same. It's a wrong view of death is what it is. And I want to just say this before I tell that story, is when we think death is what scares humans, because we think of death as any kind of separation that can't be corrected. So when I say I'm afraid of rejection, really it's a kind of death. I feel like I'm going to die there. Or if I lose a job, I'm going to die. Ultimately, it's this idea that it's a kind of dying. So all these different kinds of fears ultimately come back to this wrong view of actually of death. So when Jesus says, with me, you know, anyone who is in me cannot die, and then to watch the death and resurrection occur, he's taking away, as it says in Hebrews, not only the power of death, but the burden of the fear of death, he's taking it away, which is human's greatest fear. So you have to think about, what if I wasn't afraid of death at all? What would my life be like? That's the goal. That's what Jesus is saying when he's saying, look at my hands, look at my sides. They killed me. I am not dead. Like, they did everything they could to kill me, to reject me, to shame me. I am alive, and I am the one before whom every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. Death has been defeated. It is the greatest claim ever made. It's difficult for us to receive it, though. So in the scenario that I was talking about, is we were working in Iraq, and I inherited a team there. And so going into that team, it was made up of a group of young people and a group of older senior people. And the senior team, there was five of them. So they've worked in different parts of the world. They were fluent in Arabic, all these kinds of things. The leader of that smaller sub team was a younger guy. And he wanted to prove that he was courageous, which is okay. I mean, that's fine. But I kept telling him when I was alone with him, you don't have to prove to us that you're brave. That's not the goal here. The goal is to walk in courage, you know, which is a kind of joy, not bravery, but courage, and to only, let's only do the things that God has invited us into. So don't try and make a name for yourself. That's all very empire-ish. Kingdom is we're here to serve. We're here to, you know, we're here to serve the Iraqi people. We're here to serve our people, you know, as part of the U.S., all of that. So don't pay attention. And here's what we believe God is asking us to do here. And I told him, and I was his boss, and I said, stay with, don't leave the region where we're going to put you. And he kept saying, I want to go into this other region because you have to be brave to go there. And I'm like, we're not working there yet. Just wait for the invitation of God. Don't just take things on yourself like that. So he, you know, he decided to go anyway. And so we had these real strict protocols. If you go into another region, make sure you have an Iraqi driver with you because they'll know how to do it. Don't drive a certain kind of a vehicle because it'll draw attention to yourselves as a Westerner. If there's any kind of traffic backup, you immediately abandon the car and spread out. All these protocols. And so he violated all of them. He went into this region. He kicked out the Iraqi driver for some reason, wouldn't let him drive, left him, got in a vehicle that drew a lot of attention to them. And they got stuck in a traffic situation in this other city. Everything wrong, everything you could do wrong. And as a result, some militant terrorists, people saw the vehicle. They saw it was stuck in a traffic jam. They recognized it as a U.S. vehicle. They could see that the five inside were Americans. And so they just assaulted the car with their weapons. I mean, they just blasted it to pieces. And so in the five people in the vehicle, four were killed, one survived. The one that survived was shot so many times that when I went to the morgue and to the MASH unit, I said, how many times it was one of the women, has she been shot? And he said, it's easier to say, where wasn't she shot? He said, she has so many bullet wounds in her body, but she was the survivor. So in that situation,
the driver then died as well, the young driver?
No, they all except this one woman were killed in the car.
Wow.
The lead guy, all of them, and so the lead guy, it was his wife who survived. They had only been married 2 years. So the thing is, I was talking about this story because the whole thing seems like just a tragic loss, but. Because God is always working all things together for good, even when we make mistakes, even when we, for whatever reason, walk away from God or, you know, don't pay attention and make wrong decisions, God still weaves the tapestry together. It's just astounding. And this is why we're not afraid. So when all that happened, you know, and we get notified by the FBI, I get contacted, like, because no one knew why there were Americans in this particular region, because nobody went there. And so the FBI has to investigate it because they find out there's Americans that were killed there, and it's considered a homicide because we're not military. And so they contact me, like, do you have people in this city? And I said, nope. And we call it a roll call, and I'm checking on where all of our people are. And I'm like, uh-oh, we're missing five. And I was like, oh, no, he did it. He did it. He went there. So I have to go up and ID the bodies because the FBI don't know who they are. And they show me the one survivor. And so the driver was the husband, and the wife was behind him in the car, and she's the only one that survived. So another single woman was killed who was at LAPD. And then an older couple that were in their late 60s who were water experts. And then the driver was her husband. So it all is like horrible, disastrous. But then when I went to contact the next of kin, you know, the family, so I called the father of the LAPD. Well, that woman, when I first came into Iraq, she was already on the ground. She was one of the first people in the country, and she had been carjacked and assaulted. And so she was really afraid of dying. And when I first met her and she was interacting with our team, she talked constantly about death. And so I said to her, we can't have you on our team because you're going to promote fear and we have to send you out. I want you to go. We're going to send you out and I'll come talk to you in 3 months. Sent her out. I went and talked with her in 3 months and she said, okay, I'm fine with, I've worked through the fear of death with God. And so I tested her on, there's a way you can test people on that kind of thing. And she was fine. She was one of the ones killed. She came back in the country after she said, I'm good. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to be in the country. Came back in. She was killed that next week in that car. When I called her father to tell her dad, I told him who I was. And he said, my daughter was killed, wasn't she? And I said, yes, she was. And he said, she called me last week and said that the Lord was inviting her home and that she knew if she went back into Iraq, he was going to take her. And that she called me to say goodbye and to say for me to rejoice when he got the call of her death. And so he was so proud of her and happy. And the funeral with the police department in LA was unbelievable. Oh my gosh. Her testimony was so moving to the cops because she had called her dad and said, I've worked through the fear of death and I'm ready to take God's greatest invitation. When I called the children of this older couple, I talked to the oldest son, you know, he was in his 30s. He said, my parents were killed, weren't they? And I said, yes. And he said, they called and said that this would be their greatest joy is to end their lives somewhere out in the field working with people. And so each call that I made, like the Spirit was ahead of it. Mm. And so even though the situation looked like bad decision and disaster and all that, you could see God far ahead of it all, weaving it all together, making peace in a bad situation. When the husband and wife, when the car was being shot at and blown up, the husband was in the front seat. He called into Jordan and one of our guys in Jordan picks up the phone and he doesn't know who it is. And he just answers the phone and says, yes. And the husband, he says, we're under attack. People are being killed. And the phone goes dead. The guy in Jordan has no idea where this phone call is coming from. So he calls the number back. The guy answers the phone again. This is while the car is being blown up, just being riddled with bullets. It was shot with an RPG. And the guy in Jordan said whoever was on the phone was so calm, he couldn't tell anything was really wrong. And this is in the middle of it all. And then he calls back. The guy answers the phone again. And he said, the Jordanian guy says, where are you? And he says, we're in Iraq. We're in the city. We're under attack. People are being killed. And the phone goes dead again. So then that guy calls the FBI. Like they contact me. While the fighting's going on, so that the car gets blown up, the husband and his wife behind him, he's in the driver, she's in the passenger, he crawls out of the car. He pulls her out. And they're the only two survivors at that point. They're laying on the pavement. These Iraqi men come and cover them with their bodies so that they can't be shot at anymore. So it's these Muslim men that saved their lives. They laid over top of them, and the husband is saying to his wife, they'd only been married 2 years. He's looking at me, looking in her eyes. He's going, look at me, look at me. And she's looking at him. She's the one that told me this story. And she said it was the most beautiful, serene experience she'd ever had. She can't remember any gun firing. She can't remember any fighting. And she said, she's just staring into his eyes and he's looking at her. He's going, we're going to be okay. Don't go to sleep. Stay awake, stay awake. So she's just staring at him and he's talking to her. And then the U.S. send a team in that gets them and they take them out and they bring them into this mass unit. And when they get into the little mass unit, she's still just staring at him and he's on a cot next to her. And he has a piece of metal straight through him. He's looking at him. He says, okay, the doctors come in the room. Okay, now you can go to sleep. Go to sleep, and I'll see you in a little while. She goes to sleep. He dies immediately. As soon as she closes her eyes, he dies. When she wakes up 6 months later, he's already been buried in the U.S. And so
Oh my goodness. You have to hold this. We've got to go to break. But oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. More with Jamie Winship in just a moment. Thanks so much for tuning into Suzy Larson Live. I told you when you tuned in, I said, you're going to hear a story that about knocks you over. And this story is knocking me over as well, talking to Jamie Winship. And I will say, because we went long, we have to break again in about 5 minutes. But oh my word, if you just tuned in, once the live show is over, go get the podcast, because I don't have time to reset and kind of encapsulate the story. So you just got to pick it up where you left off. So this man tells his wife, go to sleep. They're both riddled with bullets. She goes to sleep. He passes away. And then what happens?
So then when she wakes up, you know, they put her in a coma and they medevac her out to Germany and all of that. And then back into the U.S. When she is awake and recovers, there's already been a funeral service for her husband. He's already buried. Mm. And so what's remarkable about the whole situation is that when she, the first time she ever publicly spoke about the incident, she stood up, you know, so this happened in a Muslim country. She stands up in front of the audience that was there. And the very first thing she says, I want to tell you what I remember from the incident. And she's a really amazing person. She's very calm. And she said, I want to tell you how serene the whole thing was, how peaceful it was, the whole event, how much love there was in the whole event. And for, you know, anyone listening to the story of what happened, you would just think it would be your absolute worst nightmare. And she's just talking about, you know, and I'm just laying there and I have no, she was shot more than 20 times. And she doesn't remember any of the pain, any of the loss, any of the tragedy like that. And she says, and she said, I remember that Muslim men saved my life. That's what she remembers. Mm-hmm. And when the Muslim guys lifted her off the street to get her out of the gunfire, she said she remembers one of the men holding her skirt down to cover her legs. She said, that's how tender they were. To the protecting my modesty. That's what she remembers. And then she remembers being in the hospital, looking at her husband and him saying to her, okay, we're okay now. We're safe now. You can go to sleep. And she goes to sleep. And that's how she remembers the whole thing. And so she's remarried now. And she, you know, she has kids from her. They didn't have any kids. She has children now. And so for her, all she talks about is the beauty of God. That's how she talks about the whole event. The thing that I love about that is, oh, and she always says, I want you to know that I love Muslim people. That's what she always says. And so to me, that's the difference between the kingdom and the empire. The empire doesn't forgive. The empire gets, you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you worse. The kingdom lays down its life for the other. And she couldn't wait to get back into the Muslim world, even though the Muslim world had taken to that point in her life, what was the most precious thing to her was her husband. But she just never talked like that. And so imagine being courageous at that level and to know that even in what you would think is the darkest hour, she said, with her most intimate understanding of the beauty of everything that God is in relationship, that's her greatest moment.
And, you know, we so need to hear these stories, Jamie, because, you know, I've heard stories, too, from our surgeon friend that we referenced earlier and others who have said when these people have these tragic accidents and they're on the brink of death, they feel love. They feel peace. It's like there's a supernatural,
right,
you know, proposition here that's happening.
Yes,
and
that's
God,
right,
is with us. Emmanuel is very real. He is,
yeah,
with us.
That's and right. That's
when
right.
When you're on the brink of death like that, I mean, how many times do you hear these stories? And what the enemy wants is to have distance from that story. So it feeds our own empire narrative. You can't trust these people. Don't go outside of your city,
exactly,
block. And that's the tragedy of it all for me so much.
Right.
And
that's right.
What advice do you, actually, I'm going to take a break because I want you to have time to give thoughts to this, but what advice do you have for, you know, even Hebrews, I wish I had the verse memorized, but it talked about the Israelites who for their whole lives lived in fear of death. I mean, it was
that's
like,
right,
That's just, it's an old, it's not a new fear. It's an old one, and the enemy using it because it works. What advice would you have for us who no longer want to fear death? We want to live as if we're not afraid of anything because God is with us in all things. We're going to pause here. Jamie Winship is my guest. Wow, I really didn't even expect this show to take this turn, but I always trust God, and this is where he wanted us to go. We'll be back in a minute. Listen to Faith Radio live or on demand no matter where you go. You can download the free Faith Radio app in your app store today. Thanks so much for tuning into Suzy Larson Live, talking to our good friend Jamie Winship, who joins us every month for an identity check. And we've been talking about a scarcity mindset, which leads you to empire-type thinking, which brings me back to the Tower of Babel. And we talked about this with Dr. A.J. Swoboda about, you know, their goals were to make a name for themselves and to protect their interests. That's total empire living. Kingdom living is the opposite of that. And he said something so interesting. He said, when you self-name, like they're making a name for themselves, it always leads to death. And we're in a culture people self-naming. But in the very next chapter, God named Abraham. I will make your name famous. When God names you, life gets better for everybody. And I think that's another great example of the kingdom, I mean. So talk to us, Jamie, about, I know people are listening to that story going, I so want to live free from the fear of death, of dying, all of that. What are some steps we can take to not be so afraid?
Well, I think when you're thinking about Abraham and all of them, and when you're reading the scriptures, this is why the text is so beautiful and important to know, is watching humans wrestle with the same fear generation after generation. And even when they see God work in these amazing ways, like the Israelites, and they still get to places where they just feel like there's, the giants are too big. We just can't, we've seen God do this and that, but the giants are just too big. And what you observe in scripture is that the Lord is always walking humans through a process. And the process is an upward process. And he's so loving and gentle how he invites us in to this walk with him, to abide with him, follow me, and I will make you to become. It's this becoming process. It's not like you're just going to get it. You get it one day and you got it, but you're becoming. You're becoming the fullness of who you are by understanding the fullness of who God is and the fullness of who the other is. And it's a process. And it progresses in, like, Abraham, I want you to leave your family and go to the place I'll show you. But on that, that's step number one. So whenever we're talking about being afraid of things, it's what do I believe about that situation that produces fear in me? That one of the biggest things is that God can't go there, or God is not powerful there, wherever there is, the bad part of town or the bad country. And so the way to overcome that fear is by discovering what's true. We all know this. I can lay in bed at night and imagine a scenario that just scares me to death. But in the light, when I walk into that actual scenario, it's nothing like what the lie presents, right? The light of the truth always makes the fear less because it's what's true. So part of it is always a sense of going. Go. Don't just sit hiding and imagine all this stuff. When you're doing a listening exercise with the Lord, like someone will say to me, I'm afraid for the future because I'm afraid that I'll be unemployed. And so we'll say, let's ask the Lord about the future. When you imagine the future being unemployed and lonely, do you see Jesus anywhere in that future? And their answer is always no. And we're like, do you know why he's not there? Because it's not true. You're imagining a future that's not true, and God is not in it. Ask God where he is, because that's what's true. And so when you start to walk into these scenarios, slowly, step by step, you start to realize, wow, this is not what I thought it was. This is not how I imagined it to be. This is not how the empire said it was going to be. And so that's always my answer, is like, tell me what you're afraid of, and let's walk towards that fear. So when you watch the disciples, when you think they're afraid of storms, they're afraid of Gentiles, they're afraid of Samaritan women, They're afraid of graveyards. They're afraid of demon possessed. Jesus is going to walk them into every one of those scenarios because he's taking away their fear. And their fear is that they're going to die there. God's not going to be able to protect them there. And so Jesus is just walking them through, all through the Gospels, he's walking them through these scenarios where they're afraid because what they believe about God is not true. What they believe about themselves is not true. And what they believe about Gentiles and storms and demon-possessed people is not true. It's the truth, the experiential truth is what sets them free. It's what takes away the fear. So I just say to the Lord, Lord, this is a situation where I find I'm afraid. Here's why I'm afraid. I don't think you're powerful enough for it. That's what I believe right now. Confession, repentance, tell me the truth, show me the truth. And he always says to me, let's go. Let's go.
Wow. I don't remember which context, if it was when we were in that personal gathering of people at our friend, at our mutual friend's house, or if it was just one of the shows we did with you, but somebody said, you know, you always have these stories, Jamie, and your answer in so many words was, well, I do continually put myself in a position to have to need God. And I think we want the testimony, we want the triumph without taking the risk. And but I feel like when you move from that empire mindset to a kingdom mindset, you start to see people. You start to see their stories. You're willing to enter into a story or even a suffering that's not your own because you trust that God has more than enough for you and for them, right?
Yeah, that's right. And then that's your witness, right? That's how you become a witness to the world is not because I can just explain it or I read something about it, but I'm just saying we went into this situation. Here's what we found. And is, you know, I love how you're doing this, Susie, how you're leading this, because we started with a scenario that would be our worst nightmare. We would think we think death is the greatest failure that could happen in a situation. It's so amazing how we believe this lie. So when Jesus says, I came to die, it's like, that can't be right because dying means you lost. Dying means you failed, right? The faithful people live, the righteous people succeed. They don't die, they don't fail. And which is to miss the whole picture of what Jesus is showing us, that even unto death is victory. There is, it's always a win-win scenario if you're with Christ, right? Without Christ, it's everything's kind of a loss, but with Christ, there is no loss. It's a win-win scenario. So then you're back to abiding and practicing these things in the smallest events of your life, not going out in some giant thing that you're, you know, that just terrifies you, but just in small places where you're fearful, just one step at a time. This is how the Lord leads. Just one step, learn that step, get it, learn it. Okay, now here we go. We're going to take that a little further. Okay, did you learn that? Okay, we'll do it again. And I always tell our people, when you fall down, do you know how many times the Lord will pick you up? Every time. Every single time. And he doesn't start back at zero ever. You fall forward. He picks you up. You go forward again. You fall forward. No one falls backwards with Jesus. You fall forward.
Amazing thing about that story, too. My producer texted this in as well. She said, what's interesting about the story that you told about the man is it seems he went ahead of God. It was like he went into a risky situation just to go into a risky situation.
That's right.
The point of all this is following God's lead. But to me, that brings the bigger point is Romans 8:28. Even so, God works all things together for the good. And in that abundant mindset, there is fallibility, there is mystery, and there's glory too, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Even exactly right. And it's like what you just said about he wanted to make a name for himself. He did. That was clearly his motivation for what he did. But then, you know, his own wife who lived through her whole thing, it was a beautiful scenario. So again, it's like, I don't know how trustworthy God is that even when you look right in his face and walk away from him and fall down, he comes and picks you up.
Amazing.
You know, it's not amazing. It's even an open mistake. He comes in and finds us again. How trustworthy is that person to be?
No words. No words. Jamie, thank you for joining us today. Have the most blessed time with your family in this coming week.
Thank you.
We look forward to our next conversation. Thank you, friend.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
And to you. And we'll meet you back here next time. We love and appreciate you. Blessings to you and yours. Thanks for listening to Suzy Larson Live. Podcasts like mine are available because of your support. If it's important to you to hear things that encourage your faith, click the link in the show notes and give now.